Today's guest, I wasn't actually sure if he even existed because I met his wife, I think, a couple of times showing property, and she kept referring to Nigel, but I wasn't certain until I finally met him. I'm calling him Mr. Nobody because he's someone you never heard of and you'll never hear from again. But he's a good friend, longtime client, and he's originally from Scotland. So we're going to be able to talk a little bit about Scotland. He knows some people who bought property in Spain, and then his experience buying a home in Santa Barbara, California. Welcome to Radio Real Estate, Nigel Bennett. Say that one more time.
Good to be here.
Sorry, I didn't have my mic turned on here, or my headset turned on. So thank you for joining me. Was I correct? I think, did you come and buy in 2012?
We bought in 2012, but Christine came over in 2010. And you met her first, and I think you showed her 6 or 7 properties, or maybe that was 67 properties. I remember it being quite expensive.
Really? Now, I would never have remembered that she came in 2010.
Yeah.
Did she come more than once?
She came a couple of times because she was doing some work over here, and I think you showed her a bunch of properties then, and eventually we tracked one down in St. Anne Drive, and I came over for the weekend and did exactly what Christine said, was signed on the dotted line.
Boy, I remember it well. I remember there was a house you almost bought, and you could have pushed to buy it, and then a mutual friend of ours ended up buying it, so I'm sure they're grateful, but it all worked out for everybody, and you ended up doing a lot of work on the house. You hired out. You're kind of handy guy, and you were able to do a lot yourself. But I detect an accent. You don't sound like you're from Brooklyn. Where are you from?
I'm from Scotland. I was born in the borders of Scotland, which is the borders between Scotland and England, but spent most of my life up in the Highlands of Scotland. So I've got a bit of a hybrid Scottish accent.
Oh, the Highlands. That's the name of that Netflix series.
Yeah. I mean, it's right up there in the Highlands. Not a lot of people, a lot of mountains, great scenery, nice spot.
I agree, only because I started watching the Netflix show Highlands, and you've been feeding me so many British TV programs on Netflix. It's fabulous because I'm just hooked on that, whether they're detectives or slight comedies or whatnot, but great stuff. Love everything about England and always get confused. Great Britain encompasses what?
Great Britain is Scotland, England, Wales, and Wales. And it becomes the United Kingdom when you take into account Northern Ireland.
Oh, thank you. So United Kingdom includes Ireland, Northern Ireland.
Northern Ireland.
And Great Britain only includes Wales, Scotland, and England.
Yeah.
You know what? I've lived all these years, never quite could figure that out because nobody cares. But my guest.
You're right.
My guest is, that's the refrain my friend Brian gives me when I start going off on stuff. It's like, text me, nobody cares. My guest is Nigel Bennett, born and raised in Scotland, and bought property in California. We're going to talk about that, and property over in Scotland, and also some friends he bought in Spain. So before we get into the real estate, why do you drive on the wrong side of the road?
Yeah, well, we're British. We're different. Make things awkward. It is a bit strange. You know, you could understand it being in America and you drive on one side of the road and us in the UK and we drive on the other. But then we stand out because all the Europeans drive on the same side of the road as you do. So I don't know.
I read somewhere that back in the day when guys were mostly right-handed and they were riding their horse and they had their sword or whatever they had on their left side to draw it, they would take their right arm across to draw their sword. if they were going on the left side of the road, they would have a better chance to attack you or defend themselves from someone coming towards them. So they were apt to ride their horse on the left side of the road so they could draw with their right hand. But that may or may not be true, but we'll go with that. Christine, your lovely wife, comes over. We look at property. You decide on one. You come over. What were some of the distinctions where you go, whoa, this is very different from what's done in Scotland?
Well, in the U.S., obviously, you're a realtor. You've got a realtor that acts as an agent, but also you're a legal point of contact. And in the U.K., that's different. You don't have realtors in the U.K. You have estate agents and you have lawyers, and you need to use them both. And the estate agent does the marketing side of the property, and the lawyer does the legals. So, effectively, you know, as a realtor, you're acting as both. And that was the first point of contact, point of difference, really.
It is different, and I, because of all the wonderful British TV you've turned me on to, I did notice that they're called estate agents, not real estate agents.
Yeah.
And that means you have no escrows, which is similar to New York. If you bought in New York, they have real estate agents who really act a lot, but they also have attorneys, and I don't think they have escrows.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that was certainly the one of the major things, but it was good dealing with you because there was one point of contact, you know, so that just made life a bit easier.
My client and friend, retired Hollywood actor Rick Rossovich, he's been on the program, and in Sweden, there's only one agent. There's no buyer's agent. There's an agent that represents a seller, and then if you want to buy it, you deal with him. Is that the case in Scotland or England?
No, I mean, it's as I said, you know, in terms of there's just the one agent. You can choose your own lawyer, and they can be based anywhere to complete the deal. But the agent is usually just a local agent.
Who represents both the buyer and the seller?
Well, he represents the seller, really. He doesn't represent the buyer. He only acts as a point of contact, you know, so it is a bit strange from that point of view. He will just point you. He doesn't have any legal obligation to the buyer. He has got a legal obligation with the seller.
Yeah, in California, we used to have that, where you could actually separate it out. And now, with our agency disclosure, you know, the listing agent, which now we call him the seller's agent and the buyer's agent, has a clear, you know, response. They have a fiduciary relationship to their seller, but they also have obligations to the buyer as well. So your lawyer would be the one in your camp writing the offer?
Yeah.
Okay. My guest, Nigel Bennett, Mr. Nobody, who has become a good friend since meeting him over email in 2010, and then they bought in 2012, and then they sold that house a few years back. So that was different. And then when we were talking, you said one thing that surprised you was wooden houses.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I come from a country where 95% of the built houses are stone-built houses. And when we arrived in California, you know, saw everything getting constructed with a wooden frame and mostly stucco. And I was sort of going, well, that seems a bit strange, you know. So I do remember asking a local contractor, a well-known contractor in town, whether there was a big reason for that, because I thought it was maybe because of the earthquake scenario. And he sort of looked at me and then came up with his statement, said, no, it's really down to construction costs.
Oh, yeah. And when you say in Scotland, England, they're building in stone, you mean like concrete or blocks? Or
but yeah, bricks or concrete, you know, but, you know, some manufactured stone or original stone.
Well, of course, if you moved here, instead of coming here in 2010, 12, if you came here a couple hundred years ago, you could have bought an adobe home. And there's still a few of them out there. My guest, Nigel Bennett, he's born and raised in Scotland, came over here and went through a different experience of buying real estate. And thankfully, it was okay because he bought through me back in 2012 with his lovely wife, Christine. And, okay, so any other marked differences?
Well, I think the other big difference is as a buyer here, you don't really, you're not in for much in terms of government taxation, wherein there is a significant property tax in the UK. So depending on the price of the property you're buying, it would be between 3 and 5% of the purchase price. And if you were affluent enough to be buying a second property, you'd have to pay another 5% on top of that. So, you know, if you were buying a $1 million property in the UK, you'd pay an initial fee of tax of somewhere between 30 and 40,000. And then if it was, as I say, if it was a second home, the government would demand another 50,000 off you.
And both of those are just one-time initial fees?
Yeah, yeah.
And what about the next year?
No, that's it. It's a one-off. It's a one-off. But, you know, that it does two things. It makes you think about selling up and moving because, you know, you're going to have to pay a fee to the government. And then, obviously, if you are affluent enough to have a second property, you know, a 5% additional charge, you know, it's still a chunk of change. And that's really the UK government's way of trying to tackle the whole Airbnb thing and people with multitudes of second and third homes when there is a home shortage for both buying and for rental market.
That's very interesting. Do you know, has that second home and that the tax rates, have that been in place for quite some time?
The second home thing came in a couple of years ago, but it is having a significant effect because, you know, if you're going to go into the holiday rental market, you've got to be in it for the long term to get that initial tax back, you know. So they've been screwing down the tax breaks on second homes for some time now.
You know, I'm glad you came on to the program because I've known you almost 10 years and I didn't know this. I know you had told me something about the tax, but I didn't realize it was, as you put it, a one-off.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so sorry I didn't print my... I made a list of all the British colloquialisms and I've got a long list and I should have brought it. We should have done the whole program just using those words and confused the hell out of everybody. Bullocks. But
exactly.
But that's very interesting. Do you think the one-off 3 to 5% initial fee, do you think that's limits people from buying and selling? Because in California, people buy and sell a lot.
Oh, the agents. If you talk to any agents in the UK, they are unequivocal about it. They go, that's holding back the property market because people think twice, you know, about moving and paying that extra charge, you know. So, I mean, the other thing that is really significant in terms of taxation is, and this is, I think, better in the UK, is capital gains. When you can't sell your property, you do not pay any capital gains tax if it's your primary residence. So, you know, you could buy it 30 years ago for $250,000, and it could be worth $3 million today. And if that was your primary residence, you would not pay any capital gains tax on it when you came to sell it. If it was a second property, you would. But primary property, no capital gains tax. And that actually is, I think, a big positive.
you have no clue what the capital gains rate would be, would you?
The capital gains on a second property is probably in the 20 to 25%, I think.
Okay, that's interesting. So the government is encouraging people to buy and hold. And they say, hey, even if you buy and hold and you stay there forever, once you finally sell, excuse me, we won't charge any taxes on the gain. And that one-time fee, boy, that's really interesting. For a guy like me who's a buy-and-hold guy, I'd be all over that. I'd love that.
Mm.
But very interesting. My guest, Nigel Bennett, born and raised in Scotland, bought a house here in Santa Barbara, California, bought in the States for the first time in 2012. He and his lovely wife, Christine, and we've been connected ever since. Let's see, taxes, construction. What did we miss? Any
well,
other?
Well, the one that is different, and this is, I don't think, a positive difference, is that England and Scotland obviously have a bit of history in terms of countries. You know, they've been at war with each other for a lot of years, and they're now part of the United Kingdom. But Scotland has a separate legal system to the English legal system. And because of that, if you buy a house in Scotland, you buy it under a completely different system. And whilst the English system is very similar to the US system, you know, you view something, you make an offer, you bargain, and then you tie up the paperwork. The Scottish system is...
Wait, let me guess. You have to fight. You have to fight the seller in a duel.
Yeah. You have to get your claymore out. You know, you clash swords, and if you can't settle it over claymore, you have to go for a pint and then talk it through.
No, sorry. Tell us what the process is in Scotland.
Well, you'll love this as a realtor. I think, you know, let's say if you had a $1 million property in Scotland. First thing that happens is you get a home valuation report. Before you put it on the market, you've got to get a surveyor to come along and say that property's worth $1 million. So you do that, you pay them a few hundred dollars to do that, and that's a report that's provided to the seller. And that points out the fact, you know, if the building's got subsidence or it's got a leaky roof or any construction issues. So that's a positive. But then the agent comes in, and he's sitting with this $1 million home valuation report in one hand, and he goes, right, we're going to market this at offers over $950,000. And the reason for that is fairly obvious. He wants to attract multiple interested parties. But when you actually get to the... to the point that you've got interested parties, a couple of things come into play. If you've got more than one interested party, you cannot do a separate agreement between the buyer and the seller. As soon as two people note an interest, it's got to go to sealed bids. And you can't get around that. That's the law. So let's say I put my property on the market at $1 million and it offers over 950, and you get three notes of interest. You then go, well, three notes of interest isn't good enough. I want four or five. You then wait a few more weeks, you get four or five. You then turn around to the potential buyers and say, right, the closing date is it's August the 1st. So you have to submit a sealed bid of what your best offer is, and you don't know what anyone else is going to offer, so it's a bit of a poker game. And come on, August the 1st, they open the envelopes, and the highest bid isn't, the seller doesn't have to accept the highest bid, but usually they do. Unless there's a pressing reason. And it becomes a very frustrating process because after he's noted your interest, you just cannot have a dialogue with the seller.
So you just note an interest. You don't write an offer. You just say, you know, I'm interested in writing an offer. I would and will write an offer. And they go, okay, you're an interested party. And then the seller can wait for one more, two more, three more.
Yeah.
And then a date is selected. And then you put in your bid. And then you're saying the seller is not obligated to take the highest bid?
Yeah. So, you know, it's frustrating because obviously, as you appreciate, you know, when you're attempting to buy a place, you'd like to have a little bit of negotiation there. You'd like to have some direct contact with the seller. But here, it's all taken away from you, and it's written in written by the lawyers. And you can be kept on tenterhooks until the envelopes are opened. Go, sorry, you... you weren't successful, and by the way, all that money you paid for a survey and my costs, etc., you just have to absorb that.
Oh, so you're still going to pay a survey even though you have the seller's initial appraisal that kind of includes a home inspection?
Yeah, because usually it's a high-level home inspection rather than a detailed one.
Okay, but you're not going to pay for an appraisal. My guest, Nigel Bennett, hey, if we can hold you over through the break and do one short, quick segment, I want to follow up on this Scotland process. That seems to be very interesting. I want to compare it to what Rick Rossovich told me about Sweden. And we'll take a quick commercial break and then see if we can also squeeze in a little bit about Spain, because Nigel knows some people who recently bought in Spain. And we're just having an international program here at Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate. Stay tuned. You'll be right back.